The Sherwin-Williams Summer Sale is here. Get 30% off select paints and stains or 35% off our newest product, Emerald Symmetry, July 17th through the 27th. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
Houston, standing by, over.
Jeremy and Joe starts now.
On ESPN 97.5 and the ESPN Houston app.
Live from the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Jeremy Branham and Joe George.
Welcome in to Jeremy and Joe here on ESPN 97.5. Joe George, Will Kunkel, Brian McDonald here with you. We didn't get a gift from the Astros today like we did, so we'll discuss a bunch of random stuff on the show. It's a full All-Star break show today before the Astros get back on their way. Jimmy Price from Astros Future, or he's Astros Future on Twitter, will join us at 5 o'clock, talk about the Astros draft from over the weekend. Any insight on Jaden Fielder, the prospect?
Who the f*** is that guy?
Back. Been doing a little more research. It's at like 2:30 in A-ball. It's not great. We'll talk some Texans, some Astros. We'll kind of mix it up today. We're going to go a little all over the place. We'll start some cuts. Have some fun. You're welcome in. Contribute to the show in any way you want. Pretty much in anything goes Thursday and Friday. So any questions you got, we're going to answer them. Basically, also like, so it's like a mailbag for like the entire show for 2 days. No rules. There are going to be no rules over the next 2 days. We're talking about whatever we want.
But dating advice?
We are all married, so.
Yeah, dating. I got a lot of advice.
So that's mean like, we can get pretty good dating advice now. Brian's been married for a while, so like I don't know.
Yeah, 16 years.
Yeah, I don't know.
I've been out of the game for quite a while.
Yeah, I don't know how up to date.
No,
Brian's
I'm not. No.
Dating advice.
My dating predated apps, so
that's crazy. I didn't think like that's yeah. Mine was right in with apps because that's where I met my wife was on an app.
Hashtag me too.
Okay, I think
you also met your wife on Tinder.
Hinge.
Tinder was like more like. Not as like, you know, what it's become. I would, it's probably the best way to put it when I was on it.
Yeah, I know. The story just takes a different tone. Like, yeah, I met my wife on Tinder. Like,
I know.
What?
Like, it doesn't, really? Doesn't sound great. It doesn't sound great. Her parents don't listen to the show. That's not what we told
them. They don't, that's not the story you told them.
No, it's not what we told them. We told them some like nice, cutesy, romantic story.
A meet cute.
Oh, coffee shop. You crafted your own meet cute.
I was covering the Houston Cougars.
Indeed, you were.
Basketball team. She's a student on campus because she's a little younger than I am. And we met on campus. And we fell
in love.
I was
in her dorm room.
No. That's what they know. So if Eddie happens to be listening today, sorry, dude.
I replied, would. Then we met up.
You up?
But we'll start today with a question that I was thinking about last night. I was looking at some of these rankings that have been coming out. And we've talked about Nick Haley. His name's come up a little bit. I saw this article on NFL.com. We were doing the hot seats yesterday for college football, and I was thinking, who's on the hot seat this year for the Houston Texans? Player, coach, any way you want to take it. Top three players, coaches on the hot seat, because I think you can go in, honestly, like a million different directions. You can pick players. You can pick the GM. You can pick some really negative Texans fans might pick the coach. I definitely would not, but like, there's a coach that I would pick. But when you think of who's on the hot seat for the Texans, who's the first name that comes to your mind? Because I think there's really two.
I think there's
for like,
two that are obvious.
Yeah, there's
right?
two that are obvious, and the third one's a question mark. But like, who's the most hot seat of the Texans for you?
I said this. We were at East River 9, and we're going to be there tomorrow. I said this weeks ago when I was hosting with Sean Mapes. I said, Nick Haley might be on the hottest seat in the NFL. Here's the problem, though, and it's been my gripe with the Texans for years, is that if they get rid of Nick Haley, they have nowhere to turn. They didn't set themselves up for a plan B. Like, they didn't bring anybody in that's been there, done that, to help Nick Haley improve. I don't understand that move. And if you don't think Gerard Johnson's the answer, fine. Like, let him walk, let him start his career elsewhere and get on a path to where he can be where he wants to be in the NFL. But if you also have some questions around Nick Haley, which you absolutely do if you're the Texans and you're D'Amico Ryans and you're Nick Caserio, because you've admitted that it was an absolute FUBAR situation last season just trying to get to the offensive line, let alone the lack of offensive execution and success in and of itself. So if you have your doubts about Nick, but you want to keep him because you don't want all that turnover with a younger quarterback trying to get him confidence, etc., I'm cool with that. But then also hire somebody that has been there, that has done that, that has had success at the NFL level calling plays, so that if it goes awry, like, we're good. Like, we can at least see the light at the end of the tunnel of trying to find some answers versus we don't have anything else to do just like we didn't last year.
Yeah, so I think the Texans would – this is where I think the Texans would disagree, is that while they don't have someone that is an offensive coordinator in the past, they hired one of their other John Carroll graduates, graduate assistants, and Jerry Schaplinski, the former, you know, offensive assistant, you know, won 3 Super Bowls with the Patriots, was with the Rams last year. He's now the senior offensive assistant, pass game specialist, and the quarterback's coach, which he was already here last year, but he's the quarterback's coach. So that's more
so you're CJ. Just moving the pieces around. You're not bringing in blood and knowledge that you didn't previously have last year in order to fix the same guys you have in charge now.
Okay, so I agree with that, but I thought the same exact thing last year, and I actually feel like Cole Popovich did a pretty good job, and that felt like rearranging the deck chairs a little bit, but he gets promoted. So, like, Jerry getting promoted into, but that's more, again, that's more for CJ. It's not necessarily for Kaylee. In theory, it helps Kaylee, but it feels like now he has a larger voice in the room. I'm kind of just saying, like, this is what the Texans' argument would be. I agree with you. Like, they should have hired a former offensive coordinator, like someone who's called plays at the NFL level to come in and help out Nick Kaylee. He's number 2 on my list for a hot seat order.
Hold on, before you go to number 1.
Yeah, yeah.
I want to push back on the fact that Cole Popovich was the same thing in rearranging. No, because they fired the problem in Chris Strausser.
We fired Gerard Johnson.
But he wasn't the problem. The offensive coordinator's the guy. It's not the quarter. It's not the position coach.
I think they think the quarterback's the problem.
But if they do think the quarterback's the problem, then that's fine. But you also can't. He can't be the sole problem.
No. Yeah, he's not.
Right.
So you at least have,
if you don't think Nick Kaylee's the biggest problem of the pie chart, then fine. But you at least admit that he's at least 30%, 40% of the problem or whatever. And if that's the case, bring someone in to help him and lessen that percentage as you did with CJ Stroud.
I think that's what Schaplinski's role is supposed to be, is to help everyone involved. So I have Nick Kaylee number 2. And the reason why I have number 2 is that his success is really like, to whether it's his fault or not, it's dedicated to the guy who I think is number 1, which is CJ Stroud. If CJ Stroud has a great year, we're going to be talking good about Nick Kaylee. Like, Nick Kaylee is going to get a jump.
I think, depending on who you're talking to, like, you know football, I know football enough that we can see if CJ Stroud's having a good year in spite of Nick Kaylee or because of Nick Kaylee.
Sure. Like, if, and then, like, also, like, the offensive line, the running game, all those things, they help Nick Kaylee. Like, it's, sometimes I think the coordinators, I think a lot of times they take the fall for the guys who struggle around them. Whether that's fair or not, it's the role of being a coach. The players always get blamed last. The coaches always get blamed first.
I don't know if that's true.
Oh, I do.
I think it depends probably where you are and like what expectations, et cetera.
I mean, head coaches always get fired before quarterbacks do.
Well, then that's and the coordinators. Like, yes, you are right. I guess it depends. Like, kind of, I think it's case by case. I mean, I don't know. There's definitely been situations. Like, it's hard to get rid of players on multi-million dollar contracts.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's like, more like the young quarterback is right. Kind of the guy. I
guess
like,
are you talking about like in the building or I guess in our conversations and accountability?
I think
from
both.
Us,
I think both. Like, it's like if you look at a quarterback situation, like, you know, Bryce Young struggles, they make a coaching change. CJ Stroud struggles, they make a coaching change. Any quarterback ever in Chicago.
Well, you're right about that.
They make
you're
a change. Right about like that. They like the coach always takes the fall first, and then because the organization, because typically the GM's still there who drafted that said quarterback. So like it's like if CJ has a good year, like largely we'll feel better about Nick Kaylee. Like you're even right. Like if there's things where it's like, eh, this doesn't look great. They don't run the ball enough. They're running the ball too much. I don't like this play call. I don't like this play call. But generally, if the offense is good, everyone will feel better about the OC because the quarterback and the offense just kind of elevate that for the most part. Like, there'll still be, there might be nitpicky things, but that's why I think CJ Stroud's number 1. Like, CJ Stroud to me is on the hot seat of the Texans right now. Now, to counteract myself, he still could still be the quarterback next year with a third offensive coordinator. I struggle to really foresee that happening. I think they're more tied together at this point because I just don't see how you decide to keep both of them or get rid of one of them if it goes bad this year. So I think it's CJ Stroud 1, Nick Cayley 2. Brian, is that what's your order for top two?
Yeah, I share the same order. And looking ahead to the third one, if you don't mind me jumping ahead, I think two names come to mind for me. We've already mentioned one of them. And I agree with you that I think he largely did a pretty good job last year, but they spent both with draft picks, obviously with Keelan Rutledge and free agency and trade, a lot of capital investing in the offensive line this year. So if the offensive line doesn't take the leap that they hope and think it should take, I could see Cole Popovich getting the blame for that.
Yeah.
Because of, like, we spent a first-round pick, we spent free agency dollars, we spent this and that, a first-round pick 2 years ago, a second-round pick, 2 years ago in Arianti Ursary. Like, so if it doesn't work, I could see Popovich being the fall guy. And the other one I considered, it might be a little bit of a kind of a spin on how we define hot seat. But Tank Dell's coming up on a contract here.
He was on my list of guys considering.
If he doesn't perform, he doesn't have a contract next year, people might think he's washed. And he could be in a lot of trouble to find regular work in the NFL if he doesn't play well this year.
Yeah, I think those are two good options for three. I did try to spend, Will, I don't know if you did this, but like I did try to rack my brain or Brian to find someone on defense to pick on.
I'm literally sitting here because I've got a rebuttal for the coaching staff, and then I'm like, all right, let's bring the defense in.
I could.
And I'm going through positions. I'm like, maybe Henry in the open field, but he's actually gotten a little bit better at that. I don't know if that's hot seat. Like,
and like also like toe-toe, like I don't care enough to like put him on this list.
But there's no one else.
Yeah, like I was like, do I want to throw Stingley out there? Just because like if he's not perfect this year, he might get traded.
No,
I don't. I couldn't find anyone. Like the only potential player, like I the only guy I kind of landed on, and it feels unfair because he's just so new to the Houston Texans, would be Reed Blankenship.
Yeah,
of just like if it doesn't go well, he'll be off the roster after 1 year.
Yeah, because they're willing to move on from CJ.
Is that even a possibility?
I think so.
Like, is he not that? You don't think he's like even roster worthy?
I think he is. Like to go into the season,
he's a
starter. It's just more like if this year goes well, like. They'll replace him. They'll find an improvement at safety. They drafted another safety this year. Like they'll go out there and like they will. If DeMeco wants to have like the perfect 11 on defense, if someone's slowing that down, that guy's out. But like even that feels like a stretch. It was a 3-year, $24 million. I don't know how much of that was guaranteed. So like I don't think like there's no one on defense. So
nope.
I thought about Frank Ross. Kyme Fairbairn, he just got a new deal.
Frank's a little interesting because they did have too many blow-ups last year on the special teams.
Yeah, but it's also just like...
Like, no, by no means do I think he's on the hot seat, like, based on this conversation.
He's a John Carroll guy.
But he does need to fix a little bit of some of that special teams like explosions, especially because it's magnified more with the Texans because the offense can't do their job.
Yeah.
So when the special teams has a blow-up, I mean, that one play can lead you to a loss.
Yeah, so I ultimately also, Brian, landed on Cole Popovich as
your third?
As my third, because
I think he could be scapegoated.
I think
DeMeco
loves
him,
and I don't think so.
It's just someone's going to have to get the blame. And, like, because, like, the text lines, we got someone saying Nick Caserio. If the offensive line's terrible.
I just think
he's so good everywhere else.
Right, so you can't throw out the 47 other guys because those five haven't been very good. And there's a couple good guys, but listen, he's going to take heat over it. There's going to be questions to be answered if the offensive line doesn't perform, but he's certainly not going to lose his job because of it, but they will have to make some sort of change within the front office and how they scout the position, how they identify who's good and how they go about it, like bringing those guys into the building.
Yeah. I think like, the other name that crossed my mind after Cole Popovich was Arianti Ursary. Like that's probably one where it's like if he doesn't play well,
who else would be the left tackle though?
It's more of they would draft one.
Oh,
they would draft one, go into free agency, and sign one after this season. Like there's nobody on this roster.
Right.
It's a full replacement. Like there are other in theory in-house options for left guard, center, and right guard. No matter what they do, like there are guys that they've brought in through the draft, whether it's early or late. That can fill left guard if Wyatt Teller is not particularly good this year. The two tackles is where like I think Braden Smith is locked in for 2 years as your right tackle.
Trent Brown could play there this year if he needs to.
Exactly. He can play there. So like it's not a super hot seat when there's already competition. Where Ursary's your left tackle.
Mm-hmm.
If he's not good this year, they will replace him. Like regardless of how good the offense is. If the offense is the best it can be, but CJ's getting hit, you know, from the left side all the time. There'll be a new left tackle in 2027. He's a second-round pick. Those guys don't get the window that first-round picks get.
No, I mean, look how impatient they were with Blake Fisher.
Exactly. Like, that guy can't touch the field.
Well, it's not like they were impatient with him as much as he showed them that he had no business being
I'm just saying, like, it was like, oh, you're a bum? Okay, you're just tight end only.
Yeah, yeah, you're the sixth offensive lineman, and that's it.
Kind of crazy.
So I went with Cole, but like I was quickly like with Ariante was right there. It's more of like if Teller, you know, doesn't do well, Ariante struggles, Brayden Smith is only good in the run game. If it just doesn't develop in the way that you're hoping, if Rutledge isn't a quick learner, like none of that might be Cole's fault, but someone's gonna get blamed for it. And because you arrange the deck chairs a little bit, that's when it's like, okay, let's bring in a new voice. Just a new body that's not been in the building, a fresh guy at offensive line as the offensive line coach. So that's my top three. So I guess Brian and I are in alignment here of CJ, Kaylee, Cole.
I'll go. I want to kind of add like a twist to it. And it's not that I don't think like D'Amico Ryans is nowhere near the hot seat. Nick Caserio for me is nowhere near the hot seat either. However, the biggest problem I have with this coaching staff, as I already talked about, is the fact that there's no one there to help Nick Kaylee if things go awry. And there's no one on the roster, insanely enough, that played quarterback at the professional level anywhere. Like, that's crazy to me because there's no relatability aspect to CJ Stroud of how to play quarterback at the NFL level and what it takes and what he needs to be better at and how he needs to go about that process. Shapinski, the quarterback coach, played quarterback with Nick Caserio at John Carroll. Ben McDaniels was a quarterback at Kent State. That's the peak quarterback experience you have on the coaching staff. So I say D'Amico Nick because who's ever picked in this offensive coordinator's position and however they're going about it, they're going to have to do something different if this Nick Kaylee experiment fails because it's still an experiment at this point.
Yeah, no, 100%. Like it is.
You know, I had a conversation with someone. I won't say who, but there was a lot of frustration in the locker room about, you know, just kind of some of the things that CJ Stroud had to deal with and that no one understood what he had to go through other than Gerard Johnson.
That's not what I said.
So they took that away from him. I know CJ was upset about losing Gerard. I'm not saying Gerard was the right guy for the job, but they now have less experience of someone that's played quarterback in the NFL level or any professional level anywhere on that coaching staff.
Yeah, no, it's...
And if you think CJ's the problem, then put someone next to him that's done it at least a decent enough level to where you can teach him.
Well, that's why, there's a reason why we're picking everyone on offense because I almost just kind of want to say everyone on the offensive staff.
I agree.
If it was an all encompassing, because if it's a disaster this year, if it's a total mess.
You're a disaster.
In terms of, like, it doesn't get any better. The run game doesn't improve. CJ Stroud takes another step backwards. He still can't have success against good defenses or have success in the playoffs. That, to me, means you move on from your quarterback, but it's also, I think, time for the organization to start fresh.
From where?
Everywhere on offense.
Oh, okay, that's fine.
Like, I'm talking, like, every single person out.
Well, no. Nico Collins?
No, like, a coach.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Like it's time to
on the offensive coaching staff is like a proven good at anything.
Yeah, like
Cole's fine, I guess. But yeah, like, whatever.
Just move on. They do have one guy who called plays on offense in their room outside of Nick Kaylee.
Tell me, you say Bill Lazor, I swear to God, I'll kill you.
Well, he has.
He's now a defensive coach, which is hilarious.
I know.
That every time I always brought this up, everyone's like, Bill Lazor would do it. I'm like, he's on defense!
But they can move him back if they needed
to. Was this a Matt Patricia situation?
I don't understand how he's a defensive coach, guys. He's an offensive coordinator in the NFL.
It's crazy.
Like, it makes no sense to me how you flip sides of the ball. We never see that happen.
Again, it's a Matt Patricia situation.
Yeah, like, it's like, what's going on?
Well, I do like the aspect that if he knows the offenses so well, he can help the defenses prepare for offenses that he sees of the opponents. But your offense sucks.
Yeah, well,
help him. I'm not saying Bill Lazor was the answer because he was there when they weren't doing well either.
Well, he's also like the worst offensive coordinator I've ever seen. So I don't really want him calling plays for the Texans personally. But
worse than Todd Haley?
Worse than Shane Waldron?
I guess Shane did jump him that one year in Chicago.
Shane Waldron's pretty bad.
Yeah. I mean, he did. Jay Cutler had his best year under Bill Lazor, but like, it's.
I mean, that offense sucked.
He was. It should have been 10 times better than it was.
I don't know why Will and I both went to former Chicago Bears OCs.
Well, that's why I know Bill Lazor, because he was a Bears OC. Like, that's why I know him. Like, that's what his experience in the NFL is.
We're playing into our audience here.
Yeah, sorry. It's just, he's on the Texans staff. I can't help it. All right.
You mentioned if this offense is the biggest disaster. Let's, on the other side, talk about what their biggest problem was, was last year, like what we talked about in the bathroom yesterday during our
that
private meeting.
Weird. All right, well, Will, and I, well, Will and I talked about in the bathroom yesterday, coming up next year on ESPN 97.5.
ESPN 97.5. Now back to the Huntington Bank Studios with Jeremy Branham and Joe George
on ESPN 97.5 and the ESPN Houston app.
On the other side, talk about what their biggest problem was, was last year, like what we talked about in the bathroom yesterday.
I can't believe you said that on the air. Welcome to the show, Will. You got to drop now. So
private conversation.
You said it. You're like, oh, we were
saying our private bathroom talk. At least it wasn't in the stall together.
That's true. That's it's by the sink. I can confirm that. Just a quick note here: the Astros 2027 schedule did come out today. So if they actually play baseball on time next year,
they
big
will
if,
not.
They'll open the season at home with a 3-game series versus the Rangers and the Red Sox. Will be the first two series of the season.
Feels like the biggest waste of time I've seen in a while, putting out the opening weekend schedule for Major League Baseball next year.
Yeah, happening. Like, I think they're going to play, like, close to 162 next year.
Chances they play a game before June 1st.
Ooh, great question.
I think they will.
You do?
Yeah.
Really?
You're more optimistic.
June 1st is actually a good line. Okay.
I'll think they know they can't mess this up.
Oh, I don't think they give a damn.
I mean, that's not, like, the players have said it. Like they all know. Like, they know, like, baseball's hot right now. Baseball is in the best spot it's been in a long time.
Here's
and
my.
Like, I think they'll find a way to play 162 next year. I don't think it's starting March 25th, but like I think we're gonna lose the All-Star break next year, and I think there's a reasonable chance that they're gonna bring back the 7-8 doubleheaders next year to help get some games in.
My eyes just fell out of the back.
I know, but like when they introduced that during the COVID season, I was like, this is the dumbest thing we've ever done. But like now that they've introduced that idea, like that's how you get 162 in next year, a shortened season, is like every other week, you know, you're playing they change the schedule around and you're playing a 7-8 doubleheader. I mean, awful.
So
it would be
childish.
Awful. And then maybe we'll get runners on second and third for the man for man role next year.
Will you
let's just slow the bases?
Yeah. Would you take the 7-8 doubleheader if they were a true doubleheader?
It was full nine?
No, if it was
what do
like
you mean?
One ticket, two games.
Oh.
You know what? Like, I would be more... Yes.
I kind of would, too. Like
If they told us, like, next season to play 162 on Sundays or on Saturdays, it's going to be like a rain delay doubleheader where mm-hmm. it's like you're going to play seven innings, then 30-minute delay, and then the next game happens. And if they sold tickets like that...
I think it'd be good for the game in a weird way.
I would be way for one season to play 162. I'd be way. I mean, just play nine. It's just I don't. What's two innings going to save you? Expand the rosters for a year and play 9-8 doubleheaders. It's fine, but like,
it's not a bad idea.
They could find a way. So like, I think they play before June 1st. Like the lockout's going to happen December 1st. That's for sure, and then we have to start seeing some movement here in the public negotiations because they've been pretty extreme so far. But to Brian's point, like...
That's how it starts.
It's kind of comical that they're releasing the schedule and we all know, like, there's not going to be baseball on March 25th next year.
I don't care about anything I'm hearing in the public eye right now with these negotiations because that's how you negotiate. You start absolutely extremely far away, but mm-hmm. like, hey, let's see what we can get. Let's get everyone thinking this is insane. And then if we get a little bit closer to normal, but still kind of far from normal,
yeah.
it'll look more normal. And that's how this works.
Yeah, like we'll do the Texans in the next segment because this is a short segment. But yeah, I don't know, Brian. You think June 1st?
Like that's where I'm setting the over under. I do. If I had to bet it, I'd probably say mid May. But I think June 1st is kind of the target to where if you're not starting ball by then, it's going to be a really weird season.
Yeah. I think you have to have baseball on July 4. However you achieve that, you can't not have baseball on July 4.
Well, like how long does like the season not happen before fans get like really upset? Like I think if it ends up being like a 2-week delay.
I don't think many people will get upset.
People
about
will
that.
Be okay.
I think there's an understanding from the public generally that there's business to be done.
Yeah, I think
May 1st people get upset.
That's what I was kind of thinking too. Was like I think May 1st is like if
really
like,
past the NFL draft. Like if the NFL draft ends and I don't have baseball to watch, then now I'm getting mad.
Yeah, like and like in a weird way, like the NFL is like making next offseason weird for us because I don't know if you guys saw this, but they're opening free agency the day after the combine. Next year, there's not going to be...
That's way earlier.
there's not going to be a gap, so it's going to be combine ends, and then free agency opens the next day, so it's going to be like boom, 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 everything. And then there's going to be a gap into the draft. It's going to be very strange. And we might not have baseball during that time. But, like, I'm kind of with you, Brian. Like, I think, like, May 1st is the date where, like, that's when fans start to get, like, angsty. Because people, like, don't always fully lock in. Like, a lot of baseball fans do. But there's a lot of people who watch their sports in chunks. Mm-hmm. They watch the NFL and they watch college football, and then they start watching the NBA, and then they watch March Madness, and then a lot of times people lose interest in the NBA and they start watching baseball. If we get through March Madness and everything and all of that ends, and we get to April and it's like, okay, there's only the NBA going on. It's the final stretch of the season. I guess that's right when the playoffs start.
Mm-hmm.
If you get to that point where, like, you know, 60% of the NBA is knocked out of the playoffs and there's not a baseball team to talk about, that's when I think people like start to get frustrated.
My biggest pushback is when you said they know they can't screw this up. I don't think they give a damn. The owners care about making as much money as humanly possible, and they don't care if they lose a whole season to get what they want. They don't care about the good of the game. The players care about having as much money as they can possibly have as well. They don't care about the good of the game. The only people that care about the good of the game, if you will, is you and me, the fans. And no one's representing the fans in this conversation, so it's not going to be represented. It's going to be a pull and tug. It's going to be a battle of egos and pride, and they're going to both die on that hill until they can't, and it's going to be the players likely that give up first because they can't. They can't hold that line because they're not multi-billionaires like the owners are.
Yeah, I think it's like the ratings are at a place now where the owners would be like, if we lose our fans again, like post 90, you know, post the lockout in 94, like you're going to need a steroid arrow to fix it again.
Maybe. They'll sell their team then. They'll sell it in two years, 3 years, where it's still worth a couple billion. They don't care. Like they don't care about the game. They care about their investment, and the investment is appreciated so much that they're good.
But it's just like the ratings are up, attendance is up.
Yep.
I don't know. I just feel like this one's different, which is why I think we're going to get more of a lockout. Just like there's always, obviously, with baseball, with basketball, with the NFL, there's been labor negotiations that have played past the point of like when free agency would start and all that. But the idea of the salary cap is so dramatically different than anything baseball's done. This feels like you're, to your point, like they'll figure out, you know, how to make it happen because they can't afford to lose ground. Like I think that's going to be secondary. Like it's there's 100%. Such a dramatic shift being discussed in baseball with the salary cap because of what the Dodgers have done that I think they're going to throw some of that caution they would normally have aside to fight that bigger battle.
Yeah, because if the owners like are – if because that's the other part of this that I think is interesting is like it's not just the owners versus the players. There are a lot of owners that are like very much against what the Mets and the Dodgers are doing. Like some of these –
for sure.
Like it's not just a X versus Y battle here. Like it is people on the ownership side fighting against other ownership groups when typically, like to Brian's point, in labor negotiations – it's owners versus players. Like, it's very cut and dry of, like, what's best for the sport is what they think and what they think. Now you're going to have people in this 30-person owner mix that are not for all on the same page of what it is. There are people that are upset that the Dodgers, because of a divorce, got grandfathered into certain TV rights and certain TV equity that other ownership groups are not allowed to get. And that's why they have so much more money than everybody else. Like, those are things that, like, the players can't fix that. So it's like, I think they find a way. I don't think we see a salary cap. I think we're going to see, like, it's going to very much resemble a salary cap. They're just not going to call it that. Like,
they're going to have to do something along those lines.
I mean, like, look.
Well, like the bird rights thing?
Yeah, that's – I don't know.
I think they're calling the cornerstone.
Yeah, player. I'm curious to see how that will –
because I don't know how you can have that without a salary cap.
I think – so my view on that is I think that's happening.
Even without a salary cap?
Yeah, I think they're going to adjust the contracts for players.
The only thing I feel confident that we're going to get as far as being anti what the Dodgers have done is the deferments.
I think
that the players would give that up. Like that seems pretty reasonable. But anything else, I see the sides digging in on.
Yeah, I think the contracting. This season feels different in the way that like we saw another major contract be handed out today to a prospect with Chase Burns from the Reds. Like, we've seen all these guys, Connor Griffin, Chase Burns, like,
and they got to get ahead
of it. The Cubs have done it. Like, feels like everyone besides the Astros has done it at this point this season. We're like, they're signing their young prospects to good money contracts. And I think it's because the players and the owners and the agents know that they're not going to get those contracts next year. Like, I think it's a very strategic thing that both players, agents, and owners are doing of like, hey, let's get you this deal locked in now.
Smart.
And it's going to be okay for us still, but it's also good for the players.
The total pie might go down.
Yeah, like the total pie might go down, but like, hey, you're going to get a 7-year contract when next year the max you could have got was a 5-year contract. Like, so it's like, I think we're going to have baseball next year.
I agree with that. Yeah. It's a question of when.
It's just, yeah, like, is it 80? What's the least amount of games you'd be okay with?
100?
That's kind of what I was at.
Yeah, 100. Yeah, like, I want more than half a season.
Yeah, because half a season, like, it's basically just divisional games.
Yeah.
Like, honestly, the season's too long as it is.
Yeah, see,
they could cut it to 150, and I'd be perfectly fine with it.
But if they played like 130 next season, I think everyone would enjoy it more.
Yeah.
Oh,
because like every game would actually just be like way more intense. Like a 30 game cutoff because of a month long lockout. Like if they started May 1st, and they lost the 4 games in March and then all of April.
Which honestly, they probably should do anyway because how many snow games do we get during April?
Exactly. And it's dumb that we get snow games. That's why we never should have started playing baseball in March. And it's like, let's open in Cleveland. That's a great idea. Great idea to open a season in Cleveland. All right, we'll go back to the Texans here. What's most wrong with the Texans offense? We'll do that next right here on ESPN 97.5. When the world's biggest tournament is hosted on our turf, you've got to do it big. And lucky for you, Twin Peaks is built for big games. At the Lodge, it's 29 degrees or nothing. Stay refreshed for the full 90 minutes as Twin Peaks girls keep the rounds coming, from ice cold 29-degree drafts of Michelob Ultra to the iconic handcrafted spicy margaritas made with Casamigos. There's something that'll score with every fan all tournament long. Pair all of that with a menu that's entirely made from scratch. You've got everything you need to stay fueled for every match. We're talking hand-tossed wings, your choice of 12 sauces, and dry rub sear-to-order burgers, and shareables that beat the brakes off of bar food. Get to the Lodge, where every seat puts you in the front row, and every second is packed with scenic views. Twin Peaks is truly unmatched for every match. Twin Peaks, eats, drinks, scenic views.
Listening to Jeremy and Joe
on ESPN 97.5 and the ESPN Houston app.
Live from the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Jeremy Branham and Joe George.
Joe George, Will Kunkel, and BMAC here with you today. So Will and I were discussing yesterday at a location undisclosed.
Privately.
What's the most wrong with the Texans offense? And what could be the most wrong for the Texans offense this year? I think this is another thing where you can give like a million different answers to this.
I think there's one overarching theme though. Now, where you want to put the weight on who like takes that burden as to why the overarching theme is what it is, that's up to the individual and how you think you want to fix it. The overarching theme with this offense is they have zero identity. You have no idea what they're going to run on 3rd-and-1 and 4th-and-1. They don't know what they're going to run on 3rd and short. They don't know what they're going to run in the biggest moment of the game. And it's not because they're all tricky. It's not because they can do something 100 different ways or they do like 15 things really, really well. Therefore, they're keeping everybody on their toes. That's not why. It's because they don't do anything really well. They don't do anything that gives them success when they line up and say, hey, the whole building knows we're about to do this and we're going to do it and we're going to do it better than the other side is going to try to stop us. They don't have that identity. So when you tell us that we're a downhill physical running team and you are not, you're delusional. There's a difference between being what you want to be and actually being it and doing it. And they don't do it. They don't execute it. And they're not that. I asked Nick Caley, D'Amico Ryans, and CJ Stroud last year, all, what is the identity of this offense? And I'll never forget when D'Amico Ryans, when I asked him that, he repeated the question back to me and then thought about it. And he said, the identity of this team is to score points any way possible. I said,
yeah, it's good.
I was like, D'Amico, I didn't like go back and forth in the press conference, but in my head, I'm like, that's not an identity. That's the goal. The identity is how you achieve that goal. They've had no identity now for 2 years.
See, I think they do.
They have an idea of what they want to do, yes, but it's not their identity.
Well, I think they have an intention of what their identity is going to be this
but
year.
That's fine. They had the same one last year, but they didn't have it.
But that's
I think they have one. They just don't do it well.
That therefore, it's not an identity. They have a concept or a construct of what they would like to be, but they're not that. That's not how they identify. Listen, we can have the identify something doesn't make you something.
I think they identify as a power run team
doesn't make you
sets
run.
Up the pass. Yeah, they're just really bad at it, or were last year.
Right, therefore, you don't line up and do it. Hence, you threw like a reverse or whatever to Nico Collins, and you had some success on that given play. Like, if it's your identity, you have success at it in the biggest moments, and you lean on it. Like, that's how you have an identity. Again, just because you identify as something doesn't mean you are something.
But I think they're going, like, they're... Okay, so I agree. Like last year, they wanted to be a run-heavy team.
Mm-hmm.
They were not built last year to do that.
Yep.
I do think that they've taken the necessary steps to do that this year.
Couldn't agree more.
Like, so, like, that's what, like, I don't think that's as much of a question, at least on paper. Like,
well,
how they execute it is a different conversation. Like, and we won't know that until they start playing games. But, like, you didn't have a running back that could do what you needed last year. You didn't have an offensive line that could do what you needed to do to be a run-heavy team last year. Like, they went out and they got in Wyatt Teller, Braden Smith, Keaton Rutledge, like, guys that can run block. It seems well. Like, we'll see about Rutledge. But, like, Teller and Braden Smith, like, they grade out as good run blockers. They brought in David Montgomery, trading for him. Like, I do think, like, they know what they want to be. It's just, are the players they brought in, I think specifically on the offensive line, good enough to execute that?
And can't forget the tight ends either. Like, like last year, like, if you want to be run heavy, well, Dalton Schultz is not going to be the run blocking tight end you need. And this season they brought in, what, two or three different run blocking tight ends?
Yeah,
through
Foster
the draft.
Moreau, Klein.
Yeah.
You have, you know, the other two guys on the roster who we'll see if they make it. I don't think Stover does personally.
Well, there's definitely an odd man out.
Yeah.
Between him and Brevin Jordan, probably.
So I think, like, I agree with last year. Like, that, like, they had an identity problem last year. Like, because they couldn't execute what they wanted to. Like they just couldn't do it. And
no, they had to rely on fumbles that people pretended were intentional to score, like, in the red zone.
You know, it's like when you go into a season and you get the shock of all shocks that your running back's not going to be available to you for an entire year. So you got to pivot. And I think they didn't, like, they didn't do a great job pivoting. Like, I also don't think they expected to not have Joe Mixon back at all, is like kind of my gut feeling on the situation, is they expected him to return at some point in the calendar year. Mm-hmm. Obviously did not happen. But I think now with, like, Woody Marks and David Montgomery and then what they brought in the offensive line, their intent is to run the ball as often as possible. Will they do it well? We'll see.
I agree with you. Like, they've taken the steps to become more of what they want to identify as. But until they do it, they're not.
Yeah,
and that's why,
sure,
I say their biggest problem last year was no identity. Therefore, like, right now, they still don't have an identity. I agree with you. They've taken steps in order to get there. And I said last year, that offensive line – was a product of, like, not being aggressive enough in the NFL draft, but also I think realizing they were still a year away from being more towards where they wanted to be with the offensive line. We knew
it's not going to take overnight.
Right. Like, it was going to take a little bit, especially with the lack of urgency. We can have that conversation for another day, but they have taken the right steps in the right direction in order to at least identify more as they want to have that identity.
Yeah.
We'll find out.
For me, I think the biggest flaw with this offense is I just think your quarterback and your intent of what your identity is, of what they want an offense to look like, are not the same.
Yeah, but
can he operate?
He can operate a handoff. Like, if that's your identity.
Yeah, I think more in the passing game. The explosive plays,
tight splits, and all that crap.
Yeah, like he does, like the explosive thing that CJ wants, and chuck the ball down the field. Like, that's not part of their offense. It's not going to be under D'Amico Ryans. Like, and that might not change even if they change quarterbacks. Like, this might just be who he intends the Texans' offense to be, as an offense that complements your defense, not an offense that carries your football team, which is a fine approach. Like, I think you can win a Super Bowl that way because, like, your quarterback will be put in positions where, like, he still has to make big plays. At every single NFL game, he's going to have to. Just doesn't have to do it down in and down out. So can he execute the little things? Like, to me, like, ultimately, like, for this upcoming season, because I think they are going to be able to run the ball well, if they can't, I think it's going to be because CJ can't throw it. And teams are going to be stacking boxes.
Well, what comes first, right? It's like, it's a chicken or egg. Do you not pass because you can't run?
Every team's different now in the NFL. It used to be you just run to set up the pass. And the Texans...
Well, the Texans certainly don't.
The Texans might need to pass to set up the run this year.
But the problem is they don't, because they don't spread you out enough. So you don't get – when you have the tight splits like that, you don't force the defense to put smaller linebackers on the field and more corners on the field because you're playing tight. So you can cover a smaller portion of the field with slower guys. If you were going four wide, you'd have to put all your corners and you'd have to go dime, and then you could set up your run with the pass in that way. They don't do that. So you're not actually even trying to set up your run with the pass because of the personnel that you're forcing the defense to put out there is more geared to pat. Like, they can stop the run, and you're not even good at running in general. They need to be able to set up the pass with the run. If they can do that, then maybe you can have that. It is tailored if they put CJ under center, which they have to do more of, by the way. If they can put CJ under center more, it's tailored to some good play-action plays, and that's where you can get your explosiveness if you run the ball well. If you don't, then forget about it.
Brian, what do you think the biggest question mark flaw with the Texans' offense is this year?
It's going back to something I've mentioned before, and look, a lot of this could be answered by the emergence of either young guys or the return of Tank Dell, but it's just what we talked about last year with the easy options, the quick options for C.J. Stroud, and part of that might be on the design of Kaylee's offense or C.J. Stroud just not reading it, but we don't see him often hit the running backs for the quick gain. Dalton Schultz has been a safety valve, but there's not a lot of the Julian Edelmans of the world, right? The Wes Walkers, those guys that could get quick open over the middle of the field 5 yards away.
White guys.
Give the quarterback an answer when things are breaking down, and that just doesn't seem to be there for C.J. Stroud. So, I mean, hopefully Jalen Knoll turns into that guy and is no longer out-snapped by fullbacks and Braxton Berrios like he was last year. Maybe Tank Dell emerges as that, although, you know, obviously he was more of an outside receiver early on in his career. But I have question marks, especially since, as we talked about with the running game, the running back they did add, David Montgomery, is not a pass catcher. So, like, I don't know if they added that guy to the team. They're going to have to rely on guys already on the roster to develop into that.
Yeah, I think, like, cause, like, I'm like, I like Higgins,
but he's not a quick option guy.
No, but like, who, like,
can
like,
anybody be a quick option guy? I mean, if you can draw up a play, you're not really doing a whole lot. I mean, they're fast enough. He's got good enough feet to create some
space. No, but I think
quickly.
like you want like that to be Knoll or Tank, like in a perfect.
See what
world.
You're saying? Just because there's, I mean, yeah, I mean,
like there's like
quick
more,
and
like,
short areas.
Like Nico was your short yard for a while.
Yeah, it's just he can't be the only option.
I agree with that.
Like Higgins, I feel like it's more like the kind of like the bigger body, like kind of big play guy in a lot of ways. Like even just like who could run a successful screen on this team? Like
who can be like block a successful screen?
Well, Xavier Hutchinson. Text line says depth. I agree with that in certain parts of the offense, not overall, but like Brian's point about like that pass catcher out of the backfield, the wide receiver room, as we're talking about now, of like which guys like are really going to step up, like, you know, Knoll, Tank? Like, who is that guy? Like, do they do enough in the wide receiver room? The offensive line, you never can have enough depth.
I mean, really, that's the only question on defense is depth.
Depth's always going to be a question because you can't, like, stack players.
You can't, but I definitely think it's fair to question the depth at corner and edge rusher.
Sure, I guess. But, like, again, I mean, no one's got too deep.
Yeah, I mean, you obviously hope they never need it, and it's a moot point, but...
You just hope that you have the depth where you end up needing it, and you don't ever know where you're going to need it.
Yeah, that's the unfortunate part, because they got a good backup quarterback that a lot of people think should be the starting quarterback.
3-0 last year.
Let's see, text line says the biggest question mark is the quarterback position. Fair. Like, totally fair. Like I said, like, there's a million options you could choose from this. Like, you just say it's CJ Stroud. He is the biggest question, and he is the biggest flaw on this team. 9198 says the Texans' offense's biggest flaw is going to CJ's second season. They didn't make any improvements to the O-line because they thought they had a better quarterback, and we saw what CJ actually was in that season. And that's, I guess, his third season as well is probably what they mean. But, yeah, I think it's just like it's a giant question mark this year, the offense. Like, it could be...
It's not good when every criticism is fair.
Yes, but, like, it very well could be very competent this year. And that's all you kind of really need because the defense is so good is for it to be competent.
Well, that's a good... Like, the bar's not high.
Yeah, it's pretty low for this team.
My you know what I've said for the last 2 years of what this offense needs to do? Suck less. I'm not asking you to put up 35. I'm not asking you to put up 30. Just suck less. Take care of the ball. Control the clock. Control the field. And if you get in the red zone, don't be the worst. Don't be worse than the Raiders again. Don't be the worst red zone offensive team in the NFL. That's all I'm asking. Like, we're not asking a whole lot. I'm not even telling you to be 15th in the league. Just, you know, punch one in every now and then. And do it on the play that you call, like, with some intentionality and identity.
Yeah, not...
Some good keys to the game there, Will.
Yeah, not as Brian said, you know, letting the ball go through the quarterback's leg. And
it was intentional.
I still think the funniest thing of, like, maybe of everything that's happened in Houston sports since this show, like, began in September, is that people thought that was intentional. Like, that might be, like...
Really? People thought that?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Oh, yeah, they thought it was, like, a design play. There was a play that people were referencing from Tyler Shuck, actually.
That's hilarious.
When he was in college. I think it was, like... Which stop? It was his first stop. It wasn't the Louisville stop. It was whatever was before that, I think, where he, like, leaned up against the center. The ball went between his legs, and, like, it was an intentional snap that way. People thought
that's
like,
not that's what
that was. No, it's definitely not.
It was because CJ didn't lean up.
No, it was just
like he didn't make room for it.
Yeah, it's part of why I think they drafted. Like, that play might be the reason why they drafted a guy who can play center. It's just like, this can't happen again.
Drafted a guy who never played center to play center?
Yeah, I think that's going to be okay.
I hope so.
It happens more often than we realize. Like, guys play center. Like, a lot of times, like, guards.
Has he never played center, or he didn't last?
Not at a competitor. Like, he did. He was the emergency center, so he did a little bit in practice, and he practiced there at the Senior Bowl. That's pretty much the extent of it.
And that goes to what we were talking about earlier with Cole Popovich, like his importance this season. That might be his most important project. Like, of everything.
That might be what his job hinges on.
1,000%.
Not Ariante. No. Not anything else.
Like, Ariante's serviceable the way it sits right now. We don't even know what we're getting from Rutledge.
Yeah, and I'm going under the assumption
that Rutledge... Get out there, dude. Let's put some dudes in the dirt, man.
I love that guy. That he's going to be the starting center this year.
So am I.
Like, if he can't, red flag.
Oh.
If he can't beat out Jake Andrews.
Big trouble. Are you okay if Rutledge beats him out, like, eventually? Like, because he's just got some more things to learn versus physical capabilities?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, there's ways to kind of get there.
The Texans bye week is, like, because I think a lot of times, like, we see...
Kind of early.
No, I think it's, like, smack dab.
Isn't, like, week 7?
It's week 8, yeah.
Week 8? Okay.
Like, if you come out into week 9, when the transition happens, I'm okay with that.
He has to be the starting center by the time they get back from the bye. Yeah. Otherwise, I'm concerned.
Or, like, you're either in a really good position because he's not, or a really bad position if he's not. And I don't know which one it is.
Yeah.
Like, Jake Andrews either got better, or Rutledge is an uh-oh.
Yeah. I think, like, that's where... Like, that, yeah, that's the line. Like, if he's not out there November 8th against the Chargers in L.A.,
if you're whatever, tough. Who's ever out there, I think it's better to say it this way, because I don't care who the answer is, and I don't think anybody does, But if your answer at center isn't good, you're screwed. Centers are, a season's all but a wrap because it does go from there, and like we're all in trouble.
Yeah, no, like
whoever it is, I don't care.
Yeah, you need someone to like be competent and help CJ call the protections, I guess, because it's like it's not fully on CJ's plate, but it's also not fully on the center's plate. It seems like with this team, it's also it's just not clear. Like I know last year they said it was on CJ. I don't know. Watching the games, I didn't feel like CJ was doing anything.
I didn't either.
Like I see other quarterbacks do it, and I'm like, it's very clear that they're changing protections. When I watched the Texans, I wasn't like, oh yeah, he's changing everything. There's a field general. It just didn't feel like it. Like before plays of like,
well, it didn't look like it.
Yeah, he's like he's doing telling everyone to do this.
Just that, like, it never happened.
Up to the line and they just play. Like,
and you know what I'd like to see? Maybe go on two. Just go on two a couple times. Maybe a hard count here and there.
Jake Andrews couldn't handle that.
It is wild that so many of the conversations, and this is what happens when you truly follow a football team the way we do. That's why some of the national pundits, when they talk about the Texans in particular, they have no idea what the hell they're talking about, is because our conversations are so in-depth and knowledgeable that we're criticizing their inability to get in the huddle, out of the huddle, to the line, using a snap count properly, as well as who the center is. Like, it's so fundamental and foundational, their issues, that it's terrifying. Mm-hmm. It may not be like these conversations might be just fun and cute. Like, bro, wrong people in the building. Like, that's very possible, because these conversations are insane to have at the NFL level, let alone for a team that's trying to win a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Like, genuinely.
But can they run the ball?
Can they even forget that?
Can they snap the ball?
Can they? Yeah. Can they snap the ball? Can they go, ha ha, Ike, versus ha Ike or Ike? Like, can we get the John Gruden, ha? Can we get any of that?
Well, maybe John Gruden will be the next offensive coordinator for the Texans.
Can they even get to the offensive line?
You don't like that suggestion, Brian?
No. No.
The game has passed him by. Yeah, but hey, man, trends are cyclical. It might be coming back.
I don't know if his trends are coming back.
I don't know that they're not either.
Spider 2-Y banana every play.
Hell yeah. Just so I can hear CJ try to call that. all right. NFL.com put out their tiers of fantasy football rankings for wide receivers. Where does Nico Collins come on this list? Is it the right spot? Is it too high? Is it too low? We'll get to that next right here on ESPN 97.5. First, I want to talk to you about my friends at D&M Leasing. Right now, you can get into a brand new lease vehicle in the next 24 to 72 hours. If you qualify, you can get payments for as low as $400 a month. And they'll bring that car right to your house, to your office, wherever you're at. They'll take your trade-in. You just give them that call at 713-290-1000 or visit them at dmautoleasing.com. When you do, you'll speak to a veteran sales agent who's been there for on average of more than 10 years. Their manager's been there on average more than 20 years. So you're not dealing with a rookie. You're going to deal with someone that's put tons and tons of people into lease vehicles. So they'll be able to answer all your questions if you've never leased a vehicle before and just give you great customer service from start to finish. Again, if you qualify, payments for as low as $400 a month. Don't get stuck with negative equity and don't be stuck in a car payment that's going to take you 8 years to pay off. Call D&M right now at 713-290-1000 or visit dmautoleasing.com.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.